Good morning, Mr. Lawyer. Madam Treasurer, we have before us trees. And who placed these trees here?
I did.
You did?
Yes.
I don't think they're going to grow here. So tell me what and the reason that you placed these trees here.
Sure. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller Meredith Lathbury for the Department of Natural Resources. We wanted to wish you a happy Earth Week. Earth Day is coming up on Friday. And these are northern red oak trees from the state nursery. Picked them up on Monday morning.
Wow.
Special delivery. And the sheet you have there is directions for planting. So there are going to be many, many tree plantings going on this whole week around the state. We have a whole program of state staff out planting trees tomorrow.
Great.
And I know we're approaching a million trees planted on public lands.
Kevin, pull up tree. Marylanders plant trees. Will you? It's on the Smart Green and Growing website. Repeat yourself, Meredith.
We are fast approaching planting a million trees on public lands.
A million trees on public land. That's great. And I know I'm going to be planting trees on Friday. Huh? This is our Smart Green and Growing website. If you click on up across the top tab there, Kevin, go three more over. There you go, trees. What's that guy in a suit doing in the middle of a forest? And go down to our goal. Here's our goal. This is our tree goal here. That's 100,000. What, last year we did 50, and this year we're trying to do 100,000, or was it? Is that a cumulative 100,000?
It's 100,000 by the end of 2011.
Okay, so that's the 50,000, additional 50,000. And there's also a way where you can go on, go to the interactive. There's a map here you'll all be glad to know. What is a governor without a map? Tree planting challenge. Interactive map. Good. Click on that. Here we go. So you can see who's doing. Click on Frederick. And we'll see how they're doing. Total trees planted. What? What is that? Okay. So Frederick's doing pretty well as an aggregate of the whole. Huh? How many does that say? Frederick's done, Kevin? I can't read from here. 9,856. So you can click on any. Thank you, Takira. You can click on any county, and you can see how they're doing. And the click on Montgomery County, since I have two neighbors. Oh, come on! You think Montgomery County could do a little bit? Six thousand. So not quite as many as Frederick. How about Prince George's?
Get some trees.
Am I in Prince George's? Prince George's is beating Montgomery and planting of trees.
Yeah,
be somewhat counterintuitive.
Something must be done.
But let me ask the comptroller and the treasurer, Meredith, thank you for the trees. We'll make sure that they find good homes. And Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer, any thoughts?
Thank you, Governor. I was just sitting here before the trees jumped up, and I was thinking about the 16 years that Governor Schaefer served on this great Board of Public Works, and just was reflecting a little bit on his extraordinary life and legacy. And lots of tributes have been paid to him, and well-deserved from every corner of the state. And all of us, I think, are familiar with his tremendous accomplishments in the city of Baltimore, how he transformed the skyline, the Inner Harbor, and Orioles Park at Camden Yards, National Aquarium, the World Trade Center. As one reporter wrote, it's impossible to stand in Federal Hill Park today and imagine what downtown Baltimore would look like today if not for Governor Schaefer's vision and, frankly, irascible perseverance. I traveled to Ocean City last week, recognized a successful local business, and I shudder to think, if Governor Schaefer had not been governor, how long and intolerable that trip would now be. And his Reach the Beach program was amazing. Those creaky old drawbridges have never been replaced. What would that trip be like if US 50 had never been dualized on Kent Island? The Vienna bypass had never come to fruition. All of those things due to his leadership. It's been said that the true measure of a man's character can be taken more in those private moments when he believes nobody's really watching. And I've learned from conversations with so many people within my agency, Governor Schaefer was a man of compassion without limits. He was driven by a need to speak for those who had no other voice, and who at the end of the day, he measured his own success by his ability to help the people. As comptroller, he instilled within our agency a culture of giving and volunteerism that thrives to this day. I take credit for it, but he created that culture. A living tribute to a man who consistently put service above self. He expected his team to tend to their day jobs and do them well. He was an old-fashioned fiscal watchdog who required accountability from his own staff. And he demanded that they go the extra mile to be responsive to the taxpayers that they served. And he also built upon the tradition of an immortal predecessor, Louis Goldstein. But William Donald Schaefer led the Maryland Comptroller's Office into the 21st century, where it is now frequently recognized as the most innovative and effective tax collection agency in the United States. So there are others that are far better suited than I to talk about his unbelievable legacy as mayor of Baltimore and governor of our great state. But for me, I simply thank him for leaving me the finest gift that one office holder can leave to a successor. A highly successful office managed by a capable and experienced team that remains dedicated to the values that he lived by. I remain humbled by the opportunity to follow in his footsteps. I will continue to draw leadership from inspiration from his leadership. And I just want to say for the record, he really liked my mom, which has been documented by a number of reports that came back to me. He was still warming up to me.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller. Madam Treasurer?
Well, William Donald Schaefer was absolutely unique. They broke the mold after him. And it's very hard. You read all the things in the newspaper, beautiful articles, well thought out and well written. But you have to know, as so many people in this room did, the real person. I mean, the vitality, the determination, the caring, the pushing, the drive. I think that, and Peggy, you probably know longer and better than anyone. I think he felt the clock, the tick of the clock every day. I mean, there was just this drive that the posters on the easel, you know, do it. It has to be done today. What have we done today? And it wasn't just for people. It was for a person. I mean, this was not a person who lived in the abstract. There were real people. It's fine to love humanity, but what did you do for a person? It's fine to talk about governing, but what did you do about this issue? And he had a wonderful ability to capture people, obviously. But when he had trust in someone, he would push them, he would back them. The loyalty was two-way, and that doesn't always come across in the articles either, I think. And I just want to say one particular thing, and that is about women. He was, first of all, the most non-sexist person I've ever met, really, I think. And he had the unique insight to take an underused resource, which was women in the city, in the state, to find the right people, to trust them, to push them. I mean, when you go through the entire cabinet, from health to human resources to budget, juvenile services, And he was very wise because he got 150% from each of those people. He wasn't the easiest person to deal with. I was first working in Annapolis when he ran for mayor, and so watched this development. But he put the city on the map again. And I will say, as mayor, and I pointed this out yesterday to people who didn't believe it from Montgomery County, when he was mayor, you recall, when he was mayor of Baltimore and we needed help with the I-270 highway in Montgomery County, he sent city engineers down to help Montgomery County. I mean, he pushed. When he believed in a vision, he would really work for it. Not the easiest person always to deal with. One wonderful memory I have is I went in. He was very good to me, very supportive. But I went into his office, took the initiative because I heard about something he wanted to do, and went in and said, "I thought this was a great idea. I want to support you, Governor." It turned out he didn't like that. He wanted to drag it and beat it out of you. He didn't want you to come in and say, "I support it." And he got so upset that I walked in, I sat down in front of him, and he did what I'm sure you've all seen him do from time to time. And I had to sit there and figure out what to do. And what I did was just sit there quietly for about 8 minutes, and finally he gave up and started talking about it. But just a wonderful, unique person who inspired, who led, who really built. You can laugh about an edifice complex, but the buildings do make a difference. They do inspire. He pushed for schools. He was the force behind the reorganization of the university system of Maryland, which made our university system one of the premier in the nation. There are so many aspects, and I just hope we can all work together to make people remember Sandy, the total William Donald Schaefer, as he was from the beginning, and will be in the minds of a lot of us. And I hadn't planned to go on, and I'm like, thank you.
Madam Treasurer, thank you. I thought among the many tributes that I saw on television, the images passing over the last few days, where his own words were asked and how he wanted to be remembered, and he didn't point to any of the projects that he not only had the ability to envision and the wherewithal to complete, but he said he wants to be remembered as someone who cared. And indeed, whatever differences of opinion that people might have had with him from one issue to the next, there was never any doubting that he cared, and he cared deeply about people and individual people. So let's begin with the Secretary's agenda. I believe that Delegate Rosenberg is here.
Yes, we have 17 items on the Secretary's agenda this morning. There are no emergency reports. Item 4, we're especially honored to have Delegate Sandy Rosenberg of Baltimore City here today to talk about an advisory that the procurement advisor Mary Jo Childs has been working on with Delegate Rosenberg concerning hiring agreements. And I think Delegate Rosenberg has brought the Reverend Hathaway with him.
So. And Reverend Yeary.
Okay.
As well. Thank you.
Hello, Reverend Hathaway. How are you doing?
Governor, Comptroller, Treasurer. One of the things that I learned as a member of the Appropriations Committee was that you don't always have to pass a bill in order to affect public policy in a positive way. So that when Reverend Hathaway, Reverend Yeary, and Reverend McCorn met with me this fall to say the state needs to do more as when it is entering into contracts with the private sector to see that low-income people are hired, that they get a chance to move into the mainstream. I said, let's work on that. We first looked at federal law to see if we could model what we wanted to do on a federal law, but then we realized that we already had a law as part of welfare reform. When Governor Schaefer was governor, Mr. Collins was the Secretary of Human Resources, and I had succeeded Delegate Kopp as the chair of the subcommittee dealing with human resources. And I may say that we began welfare reform under Don Schaefer. He appointed Ben Civiletti to chair a commission on welfare reform, and we've made great strides. And so he didn't just build buildings, he helped build people. And the specific point here is that procurement contracts for construction under the existing law passed in 1998 had not been under this board's advisory, had not been included in the contracts with the private sector where efforts are to be made working with DHR to hire people who are on welfare or have been on welfare so that they can move into the workforce. I did what I often do. I sought legal advice from the Attorney General's office, and the existing law can be used to include construction contracts as well. So the advisory before you today would take the formal step of including construction contracts in the types of contracts where best efforts are to be made by private sector working with DHR to hire people who have been on welfare or have had child support issues so that they can move into the workforce, with the states being a partner in that process. So that's what this advisory is all about. And would, what does one ask? Does one seek a favorable report or favorable action? Downstairs, it's favorable report. Favorable action. Thank you. And if you don't mind, if the two reverends can speak as well. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Indeed, honorable board and members of your cabinet, I'm almost amazed I'm standing here because in 1971 I was challenged by then-Mayor Schaefer to be involved in activities of people, and so I've maintained a relationship with him over the years and have many mementos that he has signed that I cherish. But I come in because it is people in the community. Over the last 8 months, we've interacted in the West Baltimore sector, largely driven by State Center, with over 2,700 persons whose names we have, whose database we have. Since that time, we've attempted to introduce them to orientation and construction trades, and we have trained in a one-week training session over 600 persons. When we drill down to look at the characteristics of those individuals, we found that many of them fit the definition that this this advisory defines. And so we are happy. We want to just thank. It's been an amazing process. I've learned a lot out of this. I see Sister Watson. I mean, she was helpful. Ms. McDonald. I mean, I can just go down the list of all the persons who comprise your staff who have assisted us in understanding how to make government responsive to people. And it's not necessarily throwing bricks at it. It's like working with it. And so I would just want to compliment the board. We're going to do all we can to ensure the success of this advisory. There is something that I did would want to ask. We had a meeting with Secretary Sanchez, and we believe it's important that we do expand in West Baltimore the one-stop shop training, workforce training center. And so we're going to follow up with his office on that. But I just hear this to thank you. Secretary Collins, happy belated birthday. I just want to just say thank you to everyone for working with us and being responsive, I believe, to the needs of this community.
Thank you, Rob.
Good morning, Mr. Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. It is indeed a privilege to stand here as we reflect on the life of our late governor. And as we are considering this advisory, I have wondered what will folks say about us after our time has been completed. And so this is an opportunity to reestablish some hope in communities that are often forgotten about. And it applies across the board. It's not limited to race or locality. This is an advisory that says, you know what, we're in this thing together. And if we can just give the folks that we deal with on a regular basis a little bit of hope that says that they can seize the opportunity to make their lives better and better for their families, we will have accomplished much. Oddly enough, this is a significant week for those who are followers of Judaism and Christianity. It is the time that we make great sacrifices on behalf of one another, and I think this advisory is yet but a small sacrifice that's made to say, look, let's make sure that we create and expand the opportunity for as many people as possible who live in the communities that make our state the great state that it is. So I thank you in advance for your consideration. Let me thank publicly Delegate Rosenberg for his wondrous leadership in guiding us through a very interesting process, but gives us a great appreciation for not only the complexities of state government, but the great opportunities of state government as well. Thank you very much for your time.
You've got a great defender and leader in Delegate Rosenberg.
I have a great teacher.
Let me just pick one little fight with something you said, and that's simply that I don't think it's a sacrifice. If this works well, it expands the labor pool, it enriches the community, and this is the sort of thing, in fact, that makes us grow and prosper.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other thoughts on this item or others?
I have a question. How are we going to keep track of this?
Yeah. Okay. Procurement Advisor, you can talk to that a bit. We are requiring an annual report from the Human Resources Department, who's going to be working with the procurement agencies. Do you want to talk about it a little bit, Ms. Child?
Yes. Thank you, Treasurer. We do receive annual reports to date, but didn't feel that they were getting the adequate information to the Board of Public Works. So we fine-tuned the kind of data that we're getting, so we'll be able to track more accurately the kinds of work and the number of employees that are being employed under these new family investment program structures.
And then you should put it
and if you like, we can bring a report, an annual report to the board as a board item. We will do that.
We will
note that, absolutely.
One more.
I have a question.
Item
13, please.
Item 13, Ms. McCalla, Mr. Woodley here from Morgan State University. This is the renovation of Banner Carhara Hall, a final settlement with Whiting Turner, the construction company.
Okay. Good morning, and thank you for being here. My understanding is that this is a $1.15 million settlement with Whiting Turner for additional costs that the firm incurred while serving as contractor for three projects on your campus. I have a couple of questions. First, the full amount of compensation that Whiting Turner was requesting was nearly $2.7 million. What exactly does that figure represent?
The figure represents about $680,000 for a claim they had on the chiller plant project, and $132,000 claim that they had on the Morgan Commons project, a $1.18 million claim that they had on the Banneker Hall project, and some other change orders, a couple of $500,000 change orders there.
Okay. So were they overruns that were incurred during the construction of the project, or were these items that Whiting Turner should have considered when they bid the project?
From what I could assess, that they were overruns during the project, delays on the project, some of the projects that they were asked, that they accumulated during some decision-making process.
Okay. And I see from the attached letter from the Attorney General's office recommending the settlement to us that the Attorney General's office agrees with Morgan State's assessment that there is little merit to Whiting Turner's claims. Whiting Turner is claiming you're responsible for the cost overruns. The AG is basically saying there's little merit. But that doesn't really explain how the AG's office, or for that matter, you guys, Morgan, arrived at that conclusion. And if you could help me understand what the basis of that statement is, because there was nothing to back it up.
For the claim on the chiller plant project, we felt that there was not much merit on that, so we basically said that we were going to give you $0 on that. And the same thing for the academic, the Morgan Commons project. Most of the merit came through for the issues on the Banneker Hall project, which is why all the money is really associated with that particular project.
Okay, I take it there's a document. Is there the AG here? Is
yes.
there some document that provides some support for that
conclusion that
yes,
the first two were without merit?
Ms. Dana Reed wrote the letter, and I believe she's here.
Yes.
Good morning. I'm Dana Reed from the Contract Litigation Unit at the Attorney General's Office. We worked with Morgan for quite a long time, several years, analyzing the claims. These are claims on three separate projects. There were two of the projects that we concluded the claims had little merit. The bulk of the settlement, or really the entire settlement, is for the third project, Banneker Hall, which was the renovation of an existing building. And the contractor ran into a lot of problems that come when you renovate an existing building. There was asbestos discovered in the building. There were a lot of other problems. So the settlement is for one project. The statement about little merit is for the two other projects.
And you have something that articulates what you're basing that conclusion of little merit on?
Yes. Morgan, working with the Attorney General's office, retained an outside claims consulting firm that did a very thorough analysis of the claims.
Good. And well, that's terrific. I'd love to see a copy or release some summary of that. And then I had a question. It's good you're here. How did this get to this point of legal acrimony? I mean, we have cost overruns all the time on state projects. Some are settled, some are not settled. How did we get to this point?
Actually,
this kind of a dispute without just doing the normal contract modification?
It's the typical, it's not unusual at all, it's the typical administrative dispute resolution process that state contracts go through. This actually settled at a fairly early stage. It settled before it went to litigation. So it's the normal contract dispute resolution process that's followed under all state contracts.
And so that you don't have to make any changes to the process based on this situation?
I don't believe so. I mean, as I said, the bulk of the claim related to the renovation of an existing building, a very old building. It's the old building on campus. And you know, when you start a project like that, a lot of times you don't know what's going to come up during the project. So it's not unusual at all to have claims for additional costs.
I understand the personnel at Morgan State are new people there involved in this construction oversight.
That's correct. This was, sorry, I didn't hear the question.
I understand there are new personnel involved in now in these construction.
Yes, I'm the new person.
You're in. Great.
I'm
so, and this happened under your predecessors.
Correct.
Who are no longer there.
Correct.
What are some of the projects that you did?
In the past, I've managed the design and construction of Oriole Park, Comcast Center, the expansion of the Convention Center, Towson Sports Complex, and I see Scott here, too. And now I'm handling at Morgan, the Sebas, or my staff is handling the Sebas construction for the School of Architecture and Engineering. And we have under design
the Center for Environmental
Infrastructure, Environmental Studies and Infrastructure Studies, yeah. And we're under design right now with school business.
Well, that's a good change. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
And Schaefer did like Jim McAllister.
And, that, and he's the reason I am in Maryland.
Yes.
He plucked me out of New York.
It's pretty amazing, every person coming up here.
Any other questions?
No, I'm... that's fine. If you could just send me a summary of whatever that independent consultant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else on the Secretary's agenda? Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Controller. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. The ayes have it. We now move on to program Open Space, and I believe we are joined by the Mayor of the Thriving Metropolis of Eastern Maryland, Mayor Willard. Mr. Mayor, you're here for an item on Open Space, correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
Right. Okay, what item is that? Mayor Willie is here on item number two, program open space item number two. Mr. Mayor, you want to tell us what this one is?
I would love to. Also like to introduce Lorraine Gold, who is the manager of Parks and Recreation for the town of Easton, and also Brian Halls, who is the assistant town engineer. I think they're both camera shy and don't want to come up here, but anyway, they're here to help answer questions. But basically what we're here today to talk about is a 58-acre tract of land in within the town limits of Easton that was purchased back in the early 90s by the town from the savings and loan issues that were going on at the time. We were able to pick it up at a reasonable rate. And quite frankly, I'd like to buy 58 acres more at the same rate, but it's not available. Anyway, one of them's got to come up here because I do need an easel. To give you some idea of where this piece of property is, coming into Easton from the north, you'll see Bob Evans, Applebee's, Panera Bread. This is across the highway.
This is Route 50 here. Yeah.
And this particular item here is the Rails to Trails. It runs the entire length of Easton. It gives access to the parkland by young people without them actually having to go out on the town streets. This is the park area we're talking about.
And it's all farm now?
It's all farmland.
And would you replant it, or what would you do there?
This is under an annual lease with a local farmer, mm-hmm. and he's been notified that after this year he'll need to plant elsewhere. Mm-hmm. If you remember, a couple months ago we were up talking about another project that actually dealt with the Tredavon watershed that's in this particular area, and that has since started. This is an area that the county recreation uses for practice fields for T-ball, little league, and what have you. And this particular area here is the one that we've worked with the Tioga County Board of Education to put a parking lot on and a walking path to enter the park area itself from the west side. I'm not sure how it works on this side of the bay, but on the eastern side, for the county and town to work together is almost unheard of. and this worked out extremely well. We expect to put restroom facilities, water fountains and what have you into this corner. We expect to have four multi-purpose fields here for pickup games. We're going to reforest some of this area and put walking paths in. There's a lot of interest in Easton right now. There you go. We can take those two trees with us. And we'll give them places of honor. They'll have a spot forever. But we do want to put walking paths and what have you in. And there's a lot of interest in just having a bench and a tree to sit under and read a book or just walk the dog or something like that. So that's kind of the scope of this. And also, once this watershed project takes hold, this will also present places where we can use the high school kids, the ecology classes, for their kind of experiments and classwork and so forth. Not sure how far you want to get into this, but there was a project, an FAA project at the Easton Airport that produced X number of thousands of tons of millings from the runways that they're resurfacing. We're actually using those millings as base for the parking lot material and also the walking paths and so forth. So rather than find some place to dump it, we're going to use it into this area.
And will it be permeable? That is to say, will it allow the storm water to be retained there rather than rushing off and onto
yes.
the stream shed?
Yes, sir. We're going to try to do that. Yes.
Try?
Yes. We'll do that. Do it now, right?
Right. But that's kind of the project. Like I say, it's 58 acres, and some of this is private land, and we're also talking with the developers there and the owners about an entrance from Route 50 into the park area itself.
Right. Mr. Comptroller?
No, a lot of people, I'm glad this project's before us, because a lot of people think a program open space is preserving open space like that field. In fact, the part I like about it is where amenities can be created for
right.
citizens. And, you know, I'm always told when I go to Easton that it's the absolute perfect place to live and raise
pretty close.
Family.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure why you need this, but it's... I assume that with that, the challenges of getting fields constructed for all the youth sports and, as you say, quiet places for people to visit. And so I really applaud your leadership on this and assume that it's going to help relieve a lot of the congestion on the sports fields. That you
well, if you look at the regional parks that we have in Easton on any given afternoon, you've got T-ball games, you've got Little League, you've got the pickup soccer games, and who knows what all else that they play out there. And they are overcrowded. This will relieve the pressures on those fields.
And I also appreciate the cooperation between you and the county, where you, I take it, have done some joint planning.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir now, but the cost of these things anymore is so high that if we don't start sharing resources, it's just not going to work. So the county has some items that we don't have, that, for instance, the pool. We have the skate park. So we share those things, and I see Robbie's here from the Easton YMCA. But between the three of us, we're starting to share resources so we can get more kids involved and more activity on these fields. So it works out real well.
Some of the more positive things that have happened with very little garnering of any headlines or stories are the various ways of, you know, cooperating and connecting that we never did until these times of scarcity hit us, and then we had to kind of open our eyes, put our heads on a swivel, and appreciate what we have in one another than simply what we've lost or what we're not able to gain in a particular year. And so I applaud you and the county both for realizing that your citizens are citizens in both places.
Well, it's not easy, but we keep reminding them that Easton's still part of Talbot County. And
there's something about our state for some reason. I don't know if it's the how relatively small we are that makes our autonomy all the more jealously guarded. Mm-hmm. It's a strange phenomenon, and maybe together we'll overcome that short-sightedness and that fear of the other.
I think so.
Appreciate the assets.
Let's hope so. If we don't, we're in deep trouble down the road.
Anything else? Program open space?
Governor, Mayor, I couldn't let this moment, this great project in your county go by without pointing out the fact that Colonel Friedlander was supposed to be here for his last Board of Public Works meeting and unfortunately became ill, and otherwise he would be here cheering on the county and the project as usual.
Well, Howard doesn't live far from the Easton Town office, no. So we'll see him quite often.
Sure, you'll see him more.
Today he was sick about leaving.
Yes, but you will benefit.
Anything else? All right. Controller moves approval of the program open space agenda, seconded by the treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department of Budget.
Thank you very much.
Management. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, good morning. There are 12 items on the Department of Budget Management's agenda for today, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
Mr. Comptroller.
Yes, I'm going to single out one item, number 12, but frankly, there are several similar items, Madam Secretary, on the agenda. You know, on 12S, we're being asked to authorize a six-month extension to a contract between the State Department of Education and the Maryland Family Network in order to give the department additional time to award a new contract. And several times I've conveyed my frustration about these short-term contract extensions, and it's pretty basic that the agencies are given start and complete times to these contracts, and why in a timely manner they can't start the replacement process and have a new vendor lined up in time to ensure a smooth transition is beyond me. Obviously, there are some cases that are absolutely unique and you just can't avoid in a contract extension, but I think in most cases, I think it's just sloppy administrative work and lethargic approach to this whole issue. And but what makes this item and the others, frankly, that are here today even more galling is that there's no letter with the request explaining the reason for the delay. And I know, Madam Secretary, you sent a memorandum to all the heads indicating that any request to extend an existing contract in order to provide additional time to award a new contract must be accompanied by a letter from the department's secretary of the independent agency head detailing why the extension is needed and what the consequences will be if the extension is not approved. And, I mean, when you've had 3 or 5 or more years to deal with a contract, I think the bare minimum is that there be some explanation when you ask for a contract extension. So I'd like to ask Ms. McDonald to please not put items of this nature on the board's agenda unless there's a letter of explanation received in a timely fashion, and frankly, the morning of the board meeting has not been timely action, and that will give us a chance to review it, and I don't know whether that takes any formal action. I guess I'm just asking our staff to follow your...
We will work with the Department of Budget Management and ensure that the letters are there.
And certainly, I think we do have letters, follow them. We will certainly make sure that they're on a timely basis. I think with this particular contract, the department was waiting for budget action. Dr. Smealy is here, and he can certainly address specifically by the delay.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Good morning, Governor, Mr. Controller, Madam Treasurer, John Smealy, Deputy State Superintendent, Maryland State Department of Education. Mr. Controller, there was a letter submitted on April 11th. I don't know what happened, but it was submitted, and we concur mightily with everything you said about the concern about asking for an extension or a modification to a contract. We bring very few before this board. In this case, as indicated in the letter from State Superintendent Grasmick, there were issues around the federal funding, particularly with regard to the continuing resolutions. At one point, the funding for this program, which is about 70% federal, we were getting signals it was going to be reduced and flat funded back to fiscal year 08. Then it was going to be fiscal year 10. As a matter of fact, in the end, fiscal year 11 funding was reduced by $300,000. This extension was necessary because we simply didn't know about funding. And before we ask vendors, in this case a very valued partner of longstanding who provides services in our 12 regions around the state, to go through the procurement exercise, we really wanted to have some certainty about the scope and the availability of funding for this contract. So it is with reticence and due to a unique circumstance that we bring this extension request for modification before the board today. And if you have questions about the services provided by the Maryland Family Network, and as we know, our Maryland Readiness Index for this year went up to 81%. This is a major factor in helping students be ready for kindergarten. The wonderful work Maryland Family Network does with our service providers, with parents around the state to help referrals for child care and to help ensure that the child care providers receive a great deal of technical assistance. Again, it was a unique and extenuating circumstance, as explained in Dr. Grasmick's letter, we believe, that led to this request. And we apologize for any confusion.
Well, that's fine, but if I could just reinforce my request of Ms. McDonald to make sure that when we get the agenda item, which we got on April 8th, I mean, we're restricted to what we have in our packets. So you stated that you sent your letter in on April 11th. I would hope something could be worked out so that our agenda items have those letters.
Thank you, Mr. Controller.
It will happen.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Mr. Controller. Any other questions on the Department of Budget Management agenda items? Hearing none, Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. We move on now to the University System of Maryland.
Morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. I'm Jim Sterling from the University System of Maryland. We have 9 items on today's agenda. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it.
Thank you.
We now move on to the Department of Information and Technology.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Elliot Schlanger, Department of Information Technology. This morning we have 5 items on the agenda. including supplemental item 5GM, which represents a resource sharing agreement with the Maryland Broadband Co-op. I'd be happy to answer any questions about any items at this time.
And Treasurer?
On item 2, this is not really you, Elliot, it's the Board of Elections.
Right.
The new system that we are getting, that we're supposed to get, according to the law, even though there's no money for it, and it's not to be in effect until after the next gubernatorial election. We're still going ahead as though that were going to happen.
Well, what I'd like to do, if I may, bring my colleagues up from SDE, and I'm sure they'll be able to answer those questions specifically. I
don't want to spend a lot of time because it's not the item before us. But,
Good morning.
We just on automatic pilot.
Yeah, the plan is still to procure for 2014. So that this would, the way the settlement works out, that doesn't have any impact on 2012 will stay with the current system, and 2014 will still, the plan is funding, if funding is available, is to move forward with the new system.
For 2014?
Correct.
Oh, I thought it was after 2014.
Again, it's all dependent on funding.
Yeah. I mean, there isn't any money, right?
Right.
So, but we're not doing anything that obligates us to expenditure money that we don't have, or are we?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
All righty. Anything else from the Department of Information Technology? Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. All opposed? The ayes have. We move on now to the Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Beverly Swains Daly, representing the Maryland Department of Transportation. We have 12 items today. Happy to answer your questions.
No questions? Controller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. I move to the Department of General Services.
Good morning, Governor. I'm Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. The Department of General Services has 30 items on our agenda today, and we are withdrawing items 7 and 16. And we'll be glad to answer any questions you might have on the remaining items.
The ones that are withdrawn are coming back?
Yes, ma'am.
The property purchase of 7 is coming back? Number 7 is coming back, correct.
Mr. Comptroller.
Question about item 10.
Item 10. Oh, yes, sir. This is the
same,
item.
This is the easy stuff.
This is to declare the present groundsville property as surplus. It's gone through the intergovernmental process, but this is the first step in moving the property forward.
So, ultimately, the plan is to relocate the agency and its employees to a site yet to be selected in Prince George's County.
That's correct, Mr. Comptroller.
And I understand that with you that this is not the final decision, but obviously everybody's looking at this from their different perspectives. And I think it's important, since I view it as a pretty big deal, for at least for those state employees who work in the current facility, and for the people that are served by the agency, and also for the leadership of Prince George's County, who have been waiting a long time for something like this to be located in their state. And obviously the Anne Arundel leaders are concerned about adverse consequences that might flow. So I agree with you. It's a procedural step we're taking today, but it's still, I think it's a, we ought to at least have a
honest discussion about the basis and timeline and effects, because once this process moves forward, procedural or not, the decision's made. And my first question is, how many full-time and part-time employees work at the Crownsville location, and where are those folks coming from in the morning?
Let me bring Assistant Secretary Gaines up, and he can lead those questions.
Thank you, Mr. Gaines.
He's been doing the leadership on this, all of these activities.
Good morning. Michael Gaines, Department of General Services, Assistant Secretary for Real Estate. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. As you know, we have, under the Governor's leadership, looked for an opportunity to relocate the Department of Housing and Community Development to Prince George's County to meet a number of the administration's initiatives for smart growth, transit-oriented development. There are several hundred employees that work at the Community Place location, and I think Steve Silver is here. Yes. Steve, would you mind come up and give the specifics on those numbers, please?
We have approximately 350 full-time employees.
And where do they come from to go to work in the morning?
Well, they come from all over, from Anne Arundel County is the largest percentage, Prince George's, Montgomery, Baltimore City, Baltimore County.
But you had that information somewhere, I take it?
Yes.
If you could share that with the board,
sure.
Out of the 350, where they come from. And I take it that there are several sites in Prince George's under consideration. If you could stay up, if you know, stay close to Mr. Gaines. And each potential site's located near a Prince George's Metro Rail station, is that correct?
We're currently in an open procurement, and so there is limited information that we can share. But what we can share is that in the request for proposals, it was indicated a preference for transit-oriented development location.
And are there other criteria that are listed?
Yes, there are a number of criteria that are listed, and we'd be happy to forward the entire RFP to you for your knowledge.
Okay, and have you, so you're waiting for the, well, you have a preference for a transit-oriented site, I take it?
Correct.
And have you analyzed what the different transit sites potentially in Prince George's mean as far as relocation of this vis-a-vis employees, commuting times, et cetera?
We're working with our partner, MDOT, and all of the RFPs that were received were being reviewed by our partners at MDOT for TOD impact. And so part of the analysis in reviewing each of these proposals will be input from MDOT. As you know, the governor issued an executive order, I believe it was last year, regarding TOD and stressing the number of points that would be received for locations that are near TODs.
Yeah, the reason I ask, obviously, is that one TOD might be a lot less inconvenient than another TOD. For example, New Carrollton station is only 20 minutes from Annapolis. And that's a lot different than if it's located at the Naylor Road station where the announcement was made. And I'm just urging you to include in your analysis the fact there's a 46-minute commute each way, leaving aside the traffic of going into the Beltway and then going south on the Beltway. Or if you park in New Carrollton and take a metro, it's 17 stations that you have to go to get over to Naylor Road. So the question is, is the arduous or less arduous commute considered under your analysis? Obviously, I'm not saying don't put it at a TOD. I'm saying put it at a TOD that makes sense for the current commute situation.
When we built the RFP and the criteria for evaluating the RFPs, one of the components that was included was a review by the DHCD leadership and their team. I don't remember to what degree distance from current location to new location was considered, but there are quality aspects to their review that are included in the criteria.
Well, good, because I don't in any way want to throw water on the Prince George's TOD efforts. I've supported that for 20 years. That's why I support the Purple Line, and I think it's got great potential. But I think in this particular relocation, the morale and productivity of the workforce has to be considered. And frankly, from a congestion standpoint, having 200 or 300 employees going westbound on Route 50 on a commute and then heading south towards the Wilson Bridge is not exactly the commuter preference, given the traffic congestion that's intense during rush hour. So anyway, we have the goal of having a state agency in Prince George's County, which I support, and we want to provide a catalyst to transit-oriented development. But I want to make sure when you're looking at these analyses that we're keeping the all of the people's interests are on the table. Give me your assessment, or is there an assessment of the economic benefit to Prince George's County? And obviously there's some negative economic effect on Anne Arundel. Do you have that anywhere?
It was a preliminary analysis done as we undertook putting this RFP and the project together. DBED actually did an initial analysis and estimated that an investment of $16 to $22 million, an estimated employment impact ranging from 194 to 269 new FTEs. We've asked DBED to, as we're looking now at final selection, to work with us in doing a full in-plan analysis, so that would be a part of our recommendations coming forward. So as we
FTE based on net increase in.
Yeah, these are net new jobs, both direct and indirect, so that you will have some jobs that will occur, new jobs that will occur as a direct result of the location selection on site. And then
what
there'll
sort
be
of jobs are we talking about?
Retail, it could be new office locations, folks who want to be near DHCD, and those folks will move into the county because of that. There will be new retail jobs. So all of these factors go into the analysis.
It's not a net increase in state employees, Madam Treasurer.
No, not in state employees.
Just, Madam Treasurer, if I could follow up on some of that. Is it your plan, the state's plan, to lease commercial space at a new, at a Metro Rail station, or to build a new facility entirely at whatever site you select?
The RFP that went out was to solicit a developer to build and lease space to the Department of Housing and Community Development. The state does not proposed to build its own, build and own its own facility.
So there will not be an impact on the state's capital situation?
Well, we actually don't know that at this point. Depending on the final selection, there you could wind up in a capital lease structure, you could wind up in an operating lease structure. Treasurer has asked those questions over the last few days, and our response to that has been we won't know what the final structure of the deal is until we actually make a selection and negotiate the final terms and conditions of the transaction. And then, as the Treasurer knows, we'd be able to make a determination of capital versus operating lease.
good. I'm glad the treasurer's.
Well, I mean, if it's a capital lease, my understanding is it's going to have to displace something else, won't it?
Well,
and this is the top priority.
Well, if it's a capital lease, it's different than actually fitting into the capital budget itself. Capital lease will count against the state's spending affordability, correct.
And Madam Treasurer, all of those
capital debt
will come to be discussed.
Here's the problem, if I could interrupt. Here's the problem. We don't have any debt service capacity.
Well, we
or we're bumping up against the ceiling.
So it will displace something that's already there. I guess as long as you all are swell with it.
I'm swell with that. This is long overdue.
And this is not a new issue, and we can jump up and down now that the election's passed and pretend this is something that, oh my goodness, we were caught off guard by. But if we really want transit-oriented development to happen, then we have to make choices, make priorities, take affirmative actions to make it happen. And there is not a better tool for collective action in our state, especially with the federal government, sidelined by the 1% of our nation that claim 40% of our nation's wealth, than the state of Maryland is to make these TODs go. And I thought that was a policy decision that was made pretty clear when we made this announcement some 8 months ago. And if it's not, I repeat it again now.
I could just ask about plans for the current site. Is that viewed by you folks as something that government's going to be the occupant for or the corporate?
Prior to asking the planning department to do a clearinghouse review, we did a preliminary review for possible government use. We did not readily identify any specific government use, and so we asked the clearinghouse. They've done a review, which is why this item is before you today. We're declaring it surplus. We believe that there is a private use opportunity for it. An RFP was issued earlier this year. There has been a response to that RFP, leading us to believe that there is potential interest in private acquisition of that asset.
Okay. And as far as DHCD's clients and the bulk of its work, does this have an effect, whether it's located in Anne Arundel or in Prince George's?
Our information leads us to believe that by moving DHCD to Prince George's County, it puts them closer to a larger segment of their customers and their clients. This part of the state, I believe, has about 40% of the clients that DHCD represents. 30% of Marylanders living in poverty are living in the metro area. So we believe that it is an excellent opportunity for DHCD to serve its client base.
Let me get back to just in conclusion my initial point, which is the DHCD employees, of which apparently there are 350 or somewhere in that approximately. Have they been consulted and had an opportunity to share their perspective and output? What's the general reaction? When is that? If it hasn't happened, when's it going to occur? And once again, I think the point I'm trying to make here is that one TOD in Prince George's may be a lot different than another TOD, and both as far as the state's situation, as far as the morale and the employees that are being asked to relocate.
I mean, on behalf of Secretary Skinner, I mean, he's done a wonderful job with keeping the staff informed. I'm sorry, I'm Stephen Silver. I'm the department's chief financial officer. He has sent a letter to, as soon as it was announced, to the union, getting their input. Again, when the RP was there, to provide any input they would have on the selection towards it, Secretary Skinner, along with the Secretary of State, have met with the union's leaders. They've reached out. Secretary Skinner keeps employees informed every month at every month at his monthly meeting with all the employees about the move and the process and where we're going. Obviously, some of the details of the locations and the RFP and things like that he cannot share with the staff, but they've been informed throughout the whole process.
But you understand the difference between the impact once a site is selected and...
Of course.
Just imagine driving to New Carroll and getting on the metro and going 17 stops to get to another transit-oriented site. So, keep us informed as far as the process. I think this is an important issue, and I would like to be kept in the loop as far as how your how the TOD is selected. I think it makes a difference as far as cost, convenience, result, success, et cetera. Thank you.
Can I ask, has there been an appraisal of our wooded secluded campus for HCD?
100 Community Place? No, sir, not yet. As we move further through the process of reviewing the proposals that we have for it and entering into discussions with those prospective buyers, at that time we will move into the appraisal of the property.
How many acres is it there?
About 57 acres.
57 acres.
Wow.
57.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's a big complex.
Mm-hmm. And it's mostly, is it all woods?
It's not all woods. It's a lot of it's wooded and you're not able to develop on it.
Right.
A lot of parking. We believe that there is another another opportunity, a building opportunity on the site, and we're trying to determine that. We've had discussions with the Anne Arundel County Economic Development. They have indicated their willingness to work along with us to for zoning to encourage.
That's a strange way to look at it, though, isn't it? I mean, we're going to a TOD site,
yes.
And we leave in our wake a site that we can pave and build on.
Right.
I'm not sure I'm for that.
We hear you. There are a number of proposals that we're considering.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, with the proceeds, you might even do a remediation, given given the vastness of that parking lot.
It
would make
it's
it more permeable and would allow for space in there for you to put in a few... islands and rain gardens.
We hear you.
Are you factoring in the daycare center, child care center, is not going to be...
It's not included. That will be subdivided out.
Yeah. Are you looking in the new site? You mentioned human factors, social factors,
yes.
Something like that.
Yeah, quality of life issues.
That sort
absolutely.
Of thing.
Mm-hmm. We will consider the locations and... the amenities that go with those specific locations.
That particularly was, when it was first created, seemed to be a major step forward when it was mostly a state employee. My understanding is that
that's correct.
It's not
anymore.
But still, that sort of thing that allows people to work with
yes, ma'am.
Easier mind.
Read.
Okay, anything else on the Department of General Services?
I just wanted to, on item 27, indicate that Talbot County Y is one of the best in the state.
We
tested most of them and appreciate the collaborative approach here to fire safety. Is Robbie Gill here?
Yes, he's over there.
You got a great establishment over there.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Why don't you come up and tell us exactly what that is?
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller, Governor, Madam Treasurer. This project for us was part of a $5 million capital campaign to build a 10,000 square foot teen and family center. Talbot County kids have one of the highest substance abuse rates in the state. And so with the middle school being right across the street from the Y there in Easton, we were trying to figure out how we could play a role, because we have between 150 and 200 kids a day who come over. I call that time of day El Tino. There's like this hurricane of kids that roll in.
El Tino.
El Tino. So you're hoping the building's still there at the end of the day. So in looking at a way we can make an impact, we wanted to provide a space that we could engage kids in things they were passionate about, and then use that as a tool to build assets and character in these kids where they made better choices. And so it has a climbing facility, a commercial cooking kitchen, has a media center, a computer lab, music studio, host a multi-purpose space. It's been a great tool for us to engage our older adult community. 30% of the population is over the age of 60, so we found great volunteer base around working with kids. It's been a huge amenity. As a part of that process, we had to upgrade our fire safety system to bring our full facility up to current code, and that's where you guys were able to play a huge role. The entire project was funded through contributions, but no one wanted to donate for that fire safety system, put their name on there, so we appreciate you playing a role to make this possible.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your good work you do there on accommodating El Tino. All right. The comptroller moves approval of the DGS agenda, seconded by the comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. And that concludes our
Governor,
agenda.
Governor, yeah. Before we do, we started with the former governor. And we've gone through budget. We've gone through some really terrible years in the last few years. We're coming back. You're not going to say it. So I think somebody should point out that the one thing Governor Shaker didn't particularly like was successors. I mean, he wasn't keen on that. And so it was all the more remarkable when he pointed out that the present governor is facing the toughest challenge that any recent modern governor has, and is doing a very good job at it. I don't remember him saying that about any other successor in any other position.
That's very nice. Okay, thank you.
True.
Madam Treasurer, thank you. And thank you, William Donald Schaefer, for everything you've done for all of us. And this concludes our Board of Public Works meetings. Thank you. All in favor, signal by saying aye. In case
aye.
Opposed, nay. And the DGS part passes too.
I'm going out.